are many ways you can support Write Up My Podcast, but we'd love it if you pick just one.
You can join our Rump Club via Patreon from as little as £3 a month.
Get exclusive access to behind-the-scenes content, the inside scoop on upcoming episodes, members-only workshops, no-holds-barred Gwen and Kate Wiffle Waffle, and more.
Simply head to patreon.com/writeupmypodcast. Or if you prefer to be a one-off supporter, you can send us a virtual coffee. Head to buymeacoffee.com/writeupmy.
Follow the links in our show notes and we will love you forever. Thank you.
It's right up my street, my boulevard. It's right up my Straza. Oh my God, it's garden right up there. Ah, it's right up my podcast.
Ooh. Welcome to episode 16 of Write Up My Podcast. I'm Kate White.
And I am Gwen Watson. And this is the podcast in which we talk to people about the deeply interesting stuff, what they know about to make you feel good.
Exactly. And this episode, we are going to be looking at dreams. We're going to discuss why we dream, what happens when we dream, and how dreams can help us process events and emotions that happen in our lives. But before we do, welcome home, Gwen. Aww. You've returned. So anyone who listens to this regularly might notice there's been a bit of a gap between episode 15 and this episode because Gwen was in Portugal. And we just wanted to give her a little break, didn't we?
Yes.
I'm talking about you like you're not here. Hi, Gwen.
I'm here. And I was in Portugal. And I'm very, very grateful that, because I stayed an extra week and I was working hard while I was out there. I was very, very grateful when Kate said, why don't we just put this back a week? And so you can just hang out and have some ice cream and go to a beach or two. And I was like, oh, yes, thank you so much, Kate. And we'll get really ahead of ourselves for the final week. Have we? Have we, heck?
Have we, heck? But we're here. Welcome home. How you doing?
Thank you. Oh, yeah, really good, kind of. Can you see my tan? Because I got really brown out there and now I'm in quarantine, so not one person can see it. So can you remark upon it, please?
Well, your cleavage is looking bloody fantastic. That's what the camera angle's just straight on it.
Hey, eyes up, boy.
You are looking tanned. You are looking tanned.
Thanks, love.
What normally happens to me when I come back from holiday is the second I step off the plane, it's like the tan falls away from me like a cloak of joy dropping onto the floor.
Yeah, and I, do you know what's really interesting is that I know that we go out and we tan for ourselves, but when you get home and nobody can see it, you're like, no. And I did also almost think, what was the point of getting a tan?
I know. It's like, I am looking fine. I want other people to appreciate this.
Never have I looked so healthy.
For your cat to see and enjoy.
Yeah.
So we should say, shouldn't we, that you are in the middle of a quarantine isolation.
Yes. What comes up must come down, as they say. And I was bundled straight off the plane, straight into my house where I have remained. I am on day six and I've got another, like it's now, when are we recording? It's a Wednesday. I got back a week ago today and I'm not allowed out until Sunday.
Oh God, well you're nearly there.
No, I don't want to complain because, you know, I'm doing my bit. I've realised just how compliant I am. And yes. When the man, Terry, told me on the phone, well, you're not allowed out until midnight, July the 3rd.
All right, Tez.
All right, Tez, I'll do whatever you tell me. I did nearly cry, though, because I'd bought one of those kits, the test to release early on day five. He goes, you can't do those in Wales.
No. It's like, come on, I've got the thing. Just let me do it.
I know. And I don't want to complain, but I did test negative before getting onto the plane.
Well done,
I did test negative 2 days after. It's like, why am I sat in my house by myself?
Well, on Sunday, when you get to the end of this, you are just going to go skipping out of your front door like a newborn babe into the morning sun. Fresh and healthy with not quite such a good a tan as you got.
Tan, a slightly mad look in my eye, just grabbing people saying, talk to me.
hello,
what's been going on?
Well, at least you went to Portugal for 3 weeks, you know, at least it wasn't just a long weekend. You were there for a decent amount of time. Makes it feel a bit more worthwhile.
It made it really worth it. And you know what's hilarious is that my friends have all been really lovely sending me links. They're like, oh, you can now do yoga or you can do meditation, like just spend spend, take it as an opportunity, as like a retreat. And I tell you what I've been doing is staying up late watching the Twilight saga. Different one. I'm three movies down, two to go.
That contemporary modern release.
I never watched it.
What made you decide? Have you never watched
I've never watched it. And I'm really addicted to Insta Reels. I don't know if we've spoken about this before, but I probably spend more time watching Insta Reels than I do actual television. And there's a guy on there, Brody somebody or other, who is absolutely hilarious and does impressions of Kristen Stewart in Twilight. She has a very hilarious way about her in those Twilight films.
She really does. She's setting herself up to be caricatured.
She really is. She does this whole kind of moody, angsty swishing of her hair and her mouth. And anyway, he makes me laugh so much. And I love his impressions of her that in the end, I was like, I've got to watch this film.
So, I'm just going to watch the real thing.
Yeah. And here I am. I've now watched three of them, two to go. I'm fully Team Edward. I love it. I love Twilight. It's brilliant.
Brilliant. See, silver linings. Who would have thought that you would go on this Twilight Odyssey? Yeah. But there you go. The universe has gifted you this window of time to get twilighted up to the max.
To get right into the vampires. Yes. Highly recommend it.
Great.
How about you? Have you been doing anything more constructive with your time? In fact, I know you have. You've done something rather large since I've been away.
Well, I don't know if constructive is the right word, but I've moved house and it has been insane. It all happened so quickly. Everyone was just like pushing it forward, super quick to get it ahead of this stamp duty deadline. Blah, 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 blah. And then suddenly, oh, look, we've moved house. And my mind has been blown by this life change. I think I've just not had time to process it before we actually moved house, I think. So when we actually stepped through the doors, like, oh my God, I've just moved house. How has this happened? And it's been made slightly more complicated. I'm not going to name any names, but slightly more complicated by the fact that the very lovely, very charming couple, elderly couple,
who
who lived here before us, they hadn't finished packing when we moved in. So for 3 days, and I'm pretty sure they're still going to be coming back for the rest of this week, they were just here in the house. Half the space was full of all their stuff, the garage, the shed, full of all their belongings. And I was trying to be nice and trying to be friendly and trying to be understanding. But you know, and after a while, you're like, oh my God, oh my God. I can't do this. You have to go. You have to leave. Obviously, I didn't say this to them. I got terribly British, offered them a cup of tea and said, take as long as you need. It's fine. Well, actually in my head.
But this is a very unusual situation, isn't it? This doesn't happen where you move, you buy a house and you also buy the tenants with it.
They're not
supposed to be there.
No, I kind of figured they would go with the removal vans. Also, they'd moved out a week before, so it wasn't like they were just up against it and it taken them a bit longer to move on moving day. They'd been out of the house for a week before we moved in. They'd just left loads of stuff to the last minute.
Oh,
I know. And I feel a bit
mean. Talk about not being able to let go, God's sake.
I know. It's like, really? I'm at the bottom of my charm quota. It's, yeah.
Oh, mate, that sounds... Well, is there light at the end of the tunnel? Have they actually now moved out and given you and left you with your new house?
No. So I last saw them on Monday evening, and where they just kind of sat in the garden having a chat for a while. And they said, we've still got about two more carloads to do, so we'll be back at some point during the week. So I'm just waiting for that moment for them to return and potter around a little bit more.
Oh,
and I'll give them a cup of tea and I'll be really sweet. But in the back of my head, I'll be going,
get the fuck out of my house.
What are you doing?
Get off my lawn.
But other than that.
Oh, bless you.
It's all good. It's all good.
But so have you been doing anything to make you feel good in amongst all of this? Have you had time to watch anything good?
So I want to say, because this is something that you've been trying to get me to watch for a while and I didn't get round to it, but I've just now finished watching the first and the second series of Feel Good, which is a series that was on Channel 4. It's now on Netflix. Got Mae Martin and...
Charlotte Ritchie.
Oh, it was one of the best things I have watched for so long. I just loved it. And actually, from always thinking that Charlotte Ritchie was incredible, I'm now obsessed with Mae Martin. I think she's just brilliant in it.
Yeah. And she wrote the whole thing, didn't she? Or I think she co-wrote it with somebody else.
And so just to give anyone listening who doesn't know about it, it's a couple, and Mae Martin's character struggles with addiction, cocaine addiction, and they're a couple. So it's about their kind of learning about their own sexualities, gender, addiction, family dynamics. It's amazing.
You've got, what's her name? Phoebe from Friends playing Mae Martin's mum. She's absolutely brilliant.
She's brilliant in it. And actually, I then went on and listened to this podcast series that Mae Martin did on BBC Sounds, all about addiction, which I think you sent me as well.
Oh, yes. It's a two-part one, isn't it?
Yeah. And it sounds like a lot of the script for Feel Good is based on her real life experiences.
Yes, it is semi-autobiographical, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, she did really have a Bette Midler obsession. And when they go back to her childhood room, there are posters of Bette Midler on the wall. Yeah. But it's so brilliantly written. And I'm really glad you liked it, because everybody I recommended it to have really loved it, because it's just really refreshing, because there's so much out there to watch at the moment. Yeah. And so much of it is really firmly a 6 out of 10. So to come across something that's brilliantly written, brilliantly casted, and really just really insightful and sensitively done.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, it's really funny, because Mae Martin is a stand-up comedian. And so you get, so a lot of it is set in a comedy club. And it manages to do that thing where it's really poignant and moving and insightful and really bloody funny too.
So from Twilight to Feel Good, there's a real spectrum of entertainment right there. That's a lot of things covered.
Do you know what? We cover all the bases.
We can go highbrow. If you want us to go highbrow, we can do that. But we can also do angsty teenage dramas. That also works for us.
Angsty teenage vampire love stories. Can I just ask before we go on, are you Team Edward or Team Jacob?
Team Edward. I'd think about it.
100%.
Team Edward.
Thank God.
It's right up my podcast.
So this is episode 16, Dreams, not to be confused with episode 15, Sleep. In fact, the two segue so seamlessly into each other. What is this episode about, Kate?
Well, this episode, we talk to Matthew Bowes, who is a Brighton-based psychotherapist. And one of the tools that he uses in his work is dream interpretation. We started our conversation with Matthew by asking him, why do we dream?
Well, for a long time, in sort of recent scientific circles, people actually thought that dreams really actually were just sort of epiphenomenon. That means sort of byproducts of an internal process that goes on when we're in REM sleep, mostly, because we do dream in non-REM as well. That's rapid eye movement, by the way. And for a long time, people thought it was an epiphenomenon, which means, like, a good example is, like, a light bulb. You switch a light bulb on to get light, but what happens when the light bulb you switch on to get light is the light bulb gets hot, and the heat that a light bulb gives off is an epiphenomenon of switching on the light. Yeah? So that's what
I
mean
a side effect.
That's right. So for a long time, people just thought it was kind of brain garbage. And but recently there have been a couple of neuroscientists, several neuroscientists, particularly Matthew Walker, who's quite well known. He wrote a book called Why Do We Sleep, which is like a bestseller now. Rosalind Cartwright, who is a scientist and therapist from America, and a couple of other people who are less well known. But they've come up with a lot of ideas about, thanks to things like MRI scans and things like that, about how dreams are actually very important aspects of our, firstly, well, emotional processing. Usually, most dreams are concerned with the processing of big emotional events or current concerns that we have in our lives. And the evidence that supports this from a neuroscientific perspective is the fact that when we're asleep, they can now do MRI scans in our brain and they can see what parts of the brain are active while we're sleeping. And during REM, the prefrontal cortex, this bit up here, which is the part of the brain that's to do with like executive thinking, rational decision making, that sort of thing, is switched off. And the parts of the brain which are to do with emotions, that's the amygdala being one part, and memory, the hippocampus, that's another part, they are very, very active. In fact, up to 30% more active when we're asleep in REM than when we're awake.
Really?
Wow. That's interesting.
So for that reason, they kind of figured that dreams are involved in the processing of emotions or concerns. And they did a number of experiments to test out their theories. Like, for example, one of the tests that Matthew Walker did was he showed people, a group of people, images of emotionally upsetting scenes, or emotionally, not necessarily upsetting, but scenes that will bring up emotion, let's put it that way. And one group of people he let go to sleep, and the other group of people, they stayed awake. So the people who stayed awake saw the scenes in the morning and then stayed awake till the evening. When they were shown the images for a second time, they showed a similar emotional response, and they reported that. So they said, you know, we're just as upset or just as joyful as we were when we saw these images.
Yeah.
And the ones that had a good night's rest and sleep over it, they woke them up and they reported being less stressed by the images, and the brain scans that they did showed less activity in those parts of the brain which would be involved in having the emotional reactions. So they kind of proved their theory in that very, very simple experiment.
Okay. So the theory is that while we're asleep, we are processing emotion and dealing with
100%. So, in fact, even Freud said this, and people don't actually note that he said this because people tend to denigrate Freud these days. They tend to put him down a lot of, you know, because his theories have had such a big impact on our culture that a lot of stuff that goes on in science is trying to disprove what he said. But actually, what he said was dreaming is just another form of thinking.
Okay.
And that is actually what a lot of the cognitive scientists these days are saying. I mean, we'll get on more to... I can explain more about that later on. But, yeah, dreaming is essentially thinking while we're asleep, thinking through difficult situations, usually things that are concerning us. They might not necessarily be concerns of the day. They could be things that, for some reason, because our minds are very associative, we might have seen something in the day which has triggered something unconsciously, which is linked to a memory which was painful or unpleasant. And the dream might bring that to the surface and try and work that through, comparing what you've seen in the day with, like, previous experiences. That's another very important function of dreams. It's about experiences that we have and filing them past, comparing them to previous experiences that we've had. And, you know, it's like kind of like, well, what's this, what's this, how does this fit in, you know? And it's filing them past very, very rapidly in very rapid succession. And there is the theory that out of that, what actually happens is that we develop our sense of self. It's like an integration of experience during the night which helps us develop our self-concept, how we perceive ourselves. Does that kind of make sense?
What has just become clear to me in listening to you say this is that in that case, it's not actually that important that we remember our dreams or that we understand what was happening in our dreams. It's like that process needs to happen regardless and is doing its work regardless.
I agree. That's very true.
Okay.
I don't want to put myself out of a job, but that's true.
Yeah. Because my next question is that I learnt about kind of dream interpretation on retreat in Ibiza. I think that's where most people learn about it, isn't it? And I was getting up every day, writing down my dreams straight away. I was using Betty Bettard's Bible of dream... What would you call them? Symbols. Yeah. I find it really interesting that we have to interpret our dreams and that they are symbols. Like, why are we going around, you know, with a full understanding or part understanding of what's happening around us? But in our dreams, it's all symbols or it's associations or it seems to make no sense. Why is that?
Why do dreams make no sense?
Yeah. Why are they batshit crazy?
Why are they batshit crazy? Well, the reason why they're batshit crazy, and again, Matthew Walker and another guy called Robert Stickgold, well, it's actually Robert Stickgold, not Matthew Walker, but did some interesting experiments around this, is that in dreams, what happens is our associative networks are completely opened up. So, like, in normal waking life, you're kind of... If I said to you, hamburger... Mm-hmm. What would you say?
Chips.
What would you say back? Chips. Okay.
Bun.
Bun. Mm. Okay. A very straightforward and kind of obvious association.
Yeah.
What happens when we sleep is that it's as if a sort of an aperture, like a lens, sort of opens up. And it's kind of like, as I said, this very rapid succession of like comparing things to different memories and so on. It really, really opens up. So your associative network can be completely randomized, which is how come, you know, as you say, you can, you know, have an image of your boyfriend walking towards you, and then, you know, his face will turn into
your mother,
dog, or your mother, yeah, much rather, yes, your mother, yes, exactly. But it's basically a widening of the, and the experiments they did were very interesting, because what they actually showed, which is another function of dreams, and what people use dreams for in things like lucid dreaming and dream incubation and that sort of thing, which is the thing about problem solving.
Okay.
Because when your associative networks are that wide open, when it comes to things like figuring out puzzles, you're a lot better at it. And they did these fascinating experiments. This guy Stickgold, these really interesting experiments. There's a when you wake somebody up in REM, you've got like a 90-second window before their brain chemistry changes. So you're still sort of in it for 90 seconds. And what they did was they gave people who were in REM, they woke them up and gave them an anagram puzzle to figure out.
Yeah.
And they were something like 30% better at figuring out the anagrams than people who are woken up, who did it in waking time.
Right.
Wow.
And who were woken up in REM.
How interesting. So does this explain why we struggle to remember our dreams? Because after that time period,
yes,
our brain is functioning differently. Okay.
Exactly. And you know, with doing things like you were doing, Gwen, like on the dream retreat, one of the problems we have when we're sort of like writing dreams down, and again, I don't want to do myself out of this part of my living, but is we do tend to start narrativizing our dreams. We start putting stuff in which wasn't really in the dream. We start like putting in associations. We start trying to...
Or interpreting.
We start sort of semi-interpreting it. It's if you're going to do a dream diary or something like that, what you need to do is you really need to wake up and get it down straight away.
Right.
And I find that the act of writing a dream, for some reason, writing it is slightly better than recording it, because that's another thing you can do, is you can record it into your phone or whatever.
Yeah.
But I find that writing it tends to be a bit better. I don't know why, but I think it might be something to do with, like, speech being left brain orientated, and dreaming activates a lot in the right brain hemisphere. So maybe it just brings you out of that state more quickly. One of the things that's really, really interesting, I think, about dreams from a contemporary cognitive science perspective is that, and this was Lakoff that came up with this idea, is that we actually, when we're talking about emotional experiences in waking life, we actually use a lot of metaphorical language. But we're not aware of it when we do it. So, for example, if I said to you, love is a journey, you'd know exactly what I was talking about, right?
Yeah.
And from that kind of base metaphor, that metaphorical concept that love is a journey, I could have lots of idioms and images which fly off that, which you completely understand what I meant. So if I said, in my relationship with my girlfriend, I'm down a cul-de-sac and we don't know which way to turn, which is all movement, journey stuff, you'd know what I meant. If I said, we're flying down the M1 doing 100 miles an hour, you'd know what I meant. So
nobody wants to be in a cul-de-sac.
No,
nobody wants to be in a cul-de-sac. We all want to be flying 100 miles an hour, don't we?
Maybe not the M1.
Maybe not the M1. But the idea is that when we dream, because we're doing this emotional process thing, what we actually see as imagery is the metaphor. So the metaphor becomes like the movie image. So you will see,
yes,
in your be in the car with your girlfriend, and you'll be in a dead end street, for example, or you know, maybe not quite as literal as that, yeah, but you kind of get the idea.
Yeah,
and there's lots and lots of metaphors like that. So, for example, like the body is a container of emotion. So the idea of container. So like heat, steam. You know, when we get angry, we talk about heat, and we talk about stuff escaping, leaking. We talk about emotions leaking, you know. Mm-hmm. People often bring dreams to do with houses. That's a very common dream, to think I'm in a house. Yeah,
yeah.
Now the yes. house often is, you know, if you think about a house is like a container, and if the house is leaking, it's like my emotions, my feelings are leaking through. Yeah,
yeah.
So having those sort of broad-based metaphorical understanding of the sort of metaphors that we use to describe, that's a really good starting point. And then you bring your individual associations to it. Because for some people, you know, a key is going to mean something entirely different
sure.
to another
yes,
person.
Yes, that makes sense.
So then you bring your personal yeah. associations in on top of that metaphor. And then you might have some way into getting an understanding of what your dream is.
How interesting. Yeah, because yeah, I get that, because like a dog for one person is a comfort object and a dog for another right. person is something to fear.
The house is a really common one, isn't it? And I think what's a really common one is being in a house that you know very well. It could be your home, it could be an old home, and suddenly discovering a room that wasn't yes. there before.
Yes, yes, that's right.
I think that's a really common one, isn't it? What does that mean?
What does it mean? I'm loath to tell you what it means without, if, I mean, if it was one of your dreams, that knowing something about you but like from a sort of generic point of view, you might say that it's like you discovered something new in your life, yeah. or you're going into a new phase in your life and you're discovering something about yourself. I think dreams, in my experience, dreams are often can give us sort of hints at particular kind of processes, life processes that we're yeah. going through. Another very common dream is driving a car or being in a car next to somebody who's driving, and usually that person who's driving is nuts or the brakes don't work
yeah.
or something yeah. like that. That's a very common one. And often
or your teeth falling out.
Teeth falling out. You see, that's a really good example of a metaphorical dream, because where metaphors are useful, because what do you say? You know, I can't get my teeth into it. Or he hasn't got teeth. So meaning, you know, you can't get into something, or like, you know, he's got no bite,
yeah.
meaning that he's not got strength or power.
Yeah.
You know, teeth falling out are often things to do with like kind of losing your power or not feeling like you're quite getting into something okay. enough.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Being chased, that seems to be a common anxiety dream that lots of people share.
Yes, yes, yes. Usually being chased by a sort of shadowy,
yes.
shadowy, nasty figure. What we try and do with dreams like that is try and incubate a dream where you can turn around and confront the thing that's chasing you, depending on how traumatised, of course, the person
yeah.
is.
Yes.
So that would be lucid dreaming, wouldn't it? So
yes.
where you take control, where you at some point in your dream you say, I am dreaming, and then it enables you to, turn around and fake confront this thing that's chasing you.
Okay.
Well, and learn, and perhaps this thing has a message for you.
Yeah, I mean, I said that rather flippantly, because lucid dreaming is actually incredibly difficult to do. I mean, the idea of controlling your dreams, I've never been very successful at it. I mean, people can do it, and you know,
I can do it.
Can you? On demand? Mm.
There's been a few times where in my dream I have been able to say to myself, I am dreaming.
And then manipulate your dream?
Have you been? And then still run away from the thing, but...
well, this brings us really interestingly then on to problem solving through dreaming.
Mm.
And you've used the term incubation. Is that one of the same thing?
Yeah. Dream incubation is the idea that you could use dreaming as a kind of creative process or a means to problem solve a particular situation. the idea is that what you do is you kind of prime yourself before you go to sleep. So if you've got a particular problem that you need to solve or a particular issue, you kind of immerse yourself in that problem.
Okay.
Or you immerse yourself in that particular thing beforehand. I mean, the very famous example of this is the guy who created the periodic table.
Okay.
He was supposed to have created the periodic table via a dream. He had all the sort of idea of all the elements, and he didn't quite know what kind of order and how to sort of fit them all together. And he slept on it, and he woke up, and lo and behold, there was the periodic table.
Me and him do have very different types of dreams.
Do you know, I think was it Thomas Edison who invented the light bulb? And I think he had a sleeping room. So during the day, he would go and sleep. So he would get the answers while he was asleep and would wake up and start scribbling everything down.
That's right. So that is a dream incubation technique. There was also Salvador Dali famously used that one. What he'd do is he'd sit in an armchair and he'd hold a key. And on the floor, he'd have a plate and he'd go into a sort of like hypnagogic state, which is like a semi-sleep state. And, of course, when you go into REM... I didn't mention this earlier on, but your body gets a little bit, your body gets paralysed. You can't actually move when you're in REM, which is why it can be a bit spooky sometimes if you've ever woken up in REM. I don't know if you've ever had this thing where you can go and you can't actually.
So, and people call it like sleep paralysis.
Yes.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right. Mm. So anyway, Dali, so he's gone into his hypnagogic state, sitting in his chair, and he drops the key and the key hits the plate and it wakes him up. And then he immediately writes down whatever it was that occurred to him in the sleep state. That's a technique.
Oh,
now I think that's pretty obvious when you look at Dali's work.
Yeah.
Automatic monkey sailing through ice cream. Grand piano horses galloping downstream.
Do you know what I learnt back in Ibiza, guys?
Yeah, darling.
We were doing exactly this, or she was getting me to do exactly this, that the night before I went to bed, I had to focus on my issue that I wanted to solve, or the question that I needed an answer to, and then ask the question to the universe, to your higher self, to whatever you're comfortable in asking to. And I would literally sit there and ask a question. And then the next morning, write down my dreams straight away. And she was the one who introduced me, as I mentioned, Betty Bettard, the dream book, Symbols for Self-Understanding. And then I would go through, like you were talking about, go through all the symbols and look them up. And when you were talking about metaphors earlier, I thought, I literally was at this time thinking, do I still want to be in this relationship with my boyfriend? I'm going to trust the universe on this one. So I was asking the universe and Betty the night before, should I still be with my boyfriend? I woke up. So one morning I dreamt that we were in a toilet, mm-hmm. and we were in the women's toilets, and in he came, and I was telling him, get out, it's the women's toilets. Next day, scribble, and it's like, if it's a toilet, if you're dreaming about a toilet, it's about getting rid of something out of your life. And I was like, oh, I see, that's a bit loud and clear. I'll tell you what, let's just give it one more go. So that next night I was like, should I be with my boyfriend? And then the next night we were like on a farm, or I was on a farm holding a pipe with loads of cow shit chugging through it.
There's a theme
and
here.
I could physically feel the cow shit heavy and chugging through this pipe in my arm. And I woke up next day, wrote it down. I was like, okay, universe.
Get rid of the boy.
Okay, higher self. And reader, I did dump him when I got back. So yes, it is possible to problem solve, isn't it?
Yeah, in theory, yes, it is. Yeah, I mean, and you know, I gave the example of the periodic table. There's a couple of other sort of famous ones, which Paul McCartney wrote the song Yesterday,
okay,
after a dream,
oh,
the Beatles song. I think Keith Richards wrote I Can't Get No Satisfaction. I think he did that in his sleep.
Oh,
oh my God,
God.
That's
he actually
just
did
showing
it
off.
In his sleep. I
yeah,
think it
Keith.
Is. Keith, I think I think it's in the Matthew Walker book, if I remember correctly. Keith recorded in his biography that actually he went to sleep with a recorder on, and then he woke up in the morning, and there was the where
oh
there was the famous
God.
Bars from no. Satisfaction. So
wow.
He'd actually done it in his sleep.
Who was he in bed with singing about yeah. I Can't Get No Satisfaction?
Oh, yes, that's a good question, yes.
I wanted to mention something. So earlier on in our conversation, when you were explaining what dreams are and why we dream and how a lot of this work is done, our brains are very active and so on. And do we even need to try and interpret our dreams? Or is actually the work that our brain is doing to sort out these thoughts, we don't need to know the outcome of that. It's being done.
It's a really, really good question, and one that I ponder myself a lot, actually. I suppose what I'd say is that dreams are quite interesting in a way because they're a kind of a... Jung said this, he said that they're a self-portrait of the psyche. So they tell you what's going on. And you might not necessarily want to know or be cognizant of what's going on. So they might be doing their thing, but you might not be sort of aware of it. And it's quite interesting because, like, even the kind of some of the modern science guys who are kind of very anti-Jung and very anti-Freud, they've done these things where they've recorded lots and lots of people's dreams, and they have found that when people are dreaming about particular things, like, for well, a bit like the boyfriend dream that you were talking about earlier, Gwen, that very often people don't want to know or don't think about the things that their dreams apparently mean. So from that perspective, you know, we might be sort of going out with our boyfriend or girlfriend and we're sort of in a, it's all right and we're just doing it, you know. But the dream might be revealing something that you're really not facing up
yes.
to.
Yes. So you should be taking note. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, but of course, we put meaning into things. We're meaning-making creatures. So the trouble is that, you know, in interpretation, we tend to sort of throw something into it. But having said that, in my experience as a therapist, most people, when they're interpreting their own dreams, tend to take the kind of literal, kind of take the kind of the obvious meaning and not the one that they possibly don't want to hear, if
oh,
that
yeah.
makes sense.
That's yes. interesting.
So they select the narrative that fits them.
So yeah. The work that you do, Matthew, you help people interpret their dreams. And like you were saying earlier, you base this on your experience or your knowledge of them and their situation.
Yes, very much.
Because
so.
Like I was saying, Betty's book really resonates for me. It's all about your spiritual path and et cetera. Yeah. That really works for me. Whereas it might not work for somebody else who needs a bit more hard facts and tangible kind of metaphors, like you were saying. So there's a whole world of different symbol interpretation out there, isn't there? So for you, though, you're using that person's experience or in order to interpret the symbols?
Very much so. Ultimately, I don't see dream dictionaries. There are a couple which are okay, you know, and you can make these kind of general principles, which are often based on these kind of metaphorical ideas that I was talking about, these metaphorical concepts. That's where they're mainly derived from, the good ones anyway. But they are very individual things. You can't... I really don't believe that you can really make a sort of a general proposition for what dreams mean, even though they're very common themes. But that's just because the sort of, as I said, the metaphors are common metaphors.
Now, something that I read years ago, which I decided to utterly dismiss, was that we only actually dream for like a couple of minutes. You know when you wake up and you feel like you've been dreaming for hours and you've had this massive adventure and you've met people, you've formed relationships, you've saved the world and all of this stuff goes on. And then to be told that actually you were only dreaming for a couple of minutes before you wake up. I was like, that cannot be true. I refuse to believe it. So please pray tell. What's the truth?
Just judging by personal experience, it is the case that actually what can seem like an epic can take place in a very, very short space of time. I mean, I know that because, you know, a lot of dreams that we remember, aren't they, are the ones that we have just before we wake up. So if, like me, you're the sort of person who wakes up at sort of 5 a.m. and then tends to sort of like be restless for a bit for about half an hour, 45 minutes, and then go back again, in that sort of 15 minutes when I've gone back to sleep, I can have, you know, an epic dream. We go through, I think it's usually three cycles of like deep sleep where everything's switched on, completely out for the count. And then we go into our first REM and then we finish the REM and then we go back into a deep sleep cycle and so on. So, and that happens 3 times throughout the night, I think. It might be 4.
And we're dreaming in REM.
And we tend to dream in the REM thing, which is like, the REM is like, if you've got any pets, like a cat or a dog, you can see when they're in REM. Their eyes start twitching like crazy and they look...
Yeah,
And they're poor goes and they're running through a forest chasing a rabbit or something.
Oh, what the cats dream of. There's a whole other conversation. I remember, because I did my undergrad, I did in psychology, and we had a whole module called the Scientific Studies of Consciousness, I think it was called. And we spent a long time debating, do cats dream? And if so, what do they dream of? This is like half of my degree.
How are you ever going to find the answer to that? You can't.
I know, the unanswerable question. Can we talk a bit about bad dreams, nightmares and night terrors? These are phrases that you hear people talking about a lot. And actually, night terrors are quite different, aren't they, to a nightmare?
Yeah, night terrors tend to happen at the beginning of the sleep cycle, whereas nightmares more towards the end of a sleep cycle.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And is it the same same thought process behind those dreams as behind a regular baffling dream that we might have?
Yeah, I think that, and the key thing with nightmares, of course, though, is you always wake up in the middle of it.
Right.
That's the thing, isn't it? Like, something horrible is happening, and then you wake up. So the processing of the dream doesn't get its chance to fully work through. So you're kind of left with it, and that's why it's particularly horrible, because usually in dreams there's some kind of resolution and you kind of go back to sleep again, and then, you know, if you think about it from what we were saying before about the integration of experience and so on, it's sort of integrated. Whereas a nightmare, it's, you don't integrate it, it's like in the middle of the night.
Yes, and that's why you're left with that horrible feeling. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I have certain foods that make me dream more.
Do you?
Cheese.
Does it?
Port. I have the craziest dreams if I drink port in the evening. Yeah, which makes it sound like a regular occurrence. but yeah, and I'm guessing it's because those foods are stimulating my brain in different ways.
Yes. I think alcohol does seem to make people dream a lot. That does, you know. I think that's because you get lighter sleep.
Yeah, so it keeps you in the REM phase.
Yeah. And there are certain things which stop dreaming, like if you smoke lots of weed, then you won't dream. That stops. That's a good reason not to smoke too much weed. One way of looking at dreams, which is, I think, very useful, is a lot of the characters that appear in our dreams and we don't know who they are generally aspects of ourselves.
Yeah? Oh, okay. Yes.
So, and even if one's dreaming of one's partner or, you know, husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's them.
Okay.
It could be how they are in you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because you've got to remember, like, like I'm looking at you, you're over there. So there's an objective Kate and there's an objective Gwen, but also I have you inside me, like you have me inside you.
our experience of you.
Yeah.
I think it's really fascinating that when we go to bed, it's like, yeah, we enter into this other world. Like, if we want to interpret, the difficult part is that we forget dreams immediately when we wake up. Mm. And so I guess the trick is what you're saying, Matthew, is to get it out there, like, as soon as you wake up in that first 90
seconds,
that's the answer.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it involves, you know, getting, switching on the light and getting your diary out in the middle of the night. So. Mm.
But there's no other way.
Get one of those light up pens.
Ooh,
a light up dream pen.
Two birds, one stone.
I like to live in a predictable way. I have the same old sandwich every day. The same routine, the same ideas. The same tomatoes and the same cheddar cheese. Oh, I'm willing to try something new. With a nickel, pickle, pickle and some chutney too. I'll give it a try, yes, I'll give it a go. I might just like it, well, you just never know. But I'll always love a cup of tea.
Thank you so much to Matthew for that really interesting conversation. And if you want to find out more about Matthew and the work that he does, his website is matthewbowlespsychotherapy.co.uk, and you can also find him on Twitter at @MattBowlesTherapy. But we'll put all these links into the show notes so that you can find them easily.
Now, as you may have noticed during that interview, I am slightly obsessed with Betty Bettard and her fantastic book, The Dream Book, Symbols for Self-Understanding. Now, Betty passed away some years ago, and she's the founder of the Inner Light Foundation in California. Now, we got in touch with them, and we were very, very lucky to actually get to speak to her husband, Charles Rubin, who has continued the work of dream interpretation in her absence. Now, we spent nearly an hour chatting with Charles, mostly about anecdotes about Betty, but also during that time he gave Kate and I a one-to-one on dream interpretation. What do you think, Kate? This could be a good time to get our dreams analysed.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Fantastic. Well, shall I get started as I'm talking already?
Go for it.
So it was a couple of weeks ago and I dreamt I was going down a very steep spiral staircase that was almost too steep to walk down. And in my dream, my hands got gripped on the hand railings and I was completely frozen. I couldn't move my hands and I couldn't ungrip my hands from the railings.
Wow.
I don't remember anything else really about the dream apart from that sensation of being gripped onto these railings.
Okay, so going downward is going in the wrong direction, first of all. And the fact that you couldn't change it and go upward shows that you were going in the wrong, just not going in the right direction.
Oh no.
So something that day could propel you in that direction.
Ah.
But do you remember what might have been happening that day that might have, you know, been, were you depressed? Were you upset? Were you, you know, were you doing something that was not working out?
I do remember, I can't quite remember, but I do remember going to bed feeling kind of confused about a decision I needed to make. So I'm guessing it was tied in with that.
Yeah. So all it means is that you were on a downward, literally a spiral down, a spiral staircase. It was just for that day.
Yeah.
All dreams are positive.
Uh-huh.
It may sound like that was not positive, but all dreams are positive because they teach you how to turn it around, how to move in the, you know, get yourself going in the right way, in the right direction.
How interesting.
So if you'd have gone to bed that night thinking of that decision, Kate, and this decision that you were trying to make, and you were thinking of going in one way with it, and then you dreamt that you were going down a spiral staircase, you would wake up in the morning knowing that that was the wrong decision and you should do the other way.
Yes.
So alarm did not being able to let go of the handrail, for one thing.
Yeah, what does that mean?
That means that you were destined that for that dream to be going in that direction so that it could teach you you know, that's not a good, healthy thing to do.
Yeah.
Going downward is not good. Upward is good.
Upward is good, down is bad. This is where it really helps to kind of really have it in context with what's going on in your everyday life, isn't it? To make sense of what those dreams mean, yeah.
Yeah, yes. And all the people in dreams are you.
Yeah.
Okay? The aspect of you.
I always have a recurring dream where I'm on a sort of, on a mission, but there's always a slight air of peril to this mission, but I'm always with someone who I've got some sort of romantic connection
Ooh.
With. And I have this dream quite regularly.
Well, you'll have the dream. And is it pleasant or unpleasant?
It's pleasant because I'm enjoying this kind of romantic frisson with this other person in the dream with me. Not in a physical sense, I should just say.
What does your significant other think of that?
Well, he thinks it's funny because this person is always kind of faceless. It's not him, but it's also not someone else.
So there's no divorce in mind. Okay, good. The other person you're with is you.
Okay.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an aspect of you.
Yeah.
So it was showing balance. That's what it is. It's showing balance.
Right.
And this is the kind of dream, a lot of people have recurring dreams that are terrifying, you know,
yeah.
Terrifying. And I tell them, and it's really true, that until they figure out why they're having that dream, they'll have it. It'll be a recurring dream.
So I was going to say, Gwen, did you have any dream experiences?
Oh, yes, it's my turn. Can I do my dream as well, Charles?
Yes, please.
Okay. So this is, again, a recurring one. But it's always slightly different. And I'm often having to go and catch transport of some kind. And I'm always running late, which is kind of what I'm like in my life anyway. But so I'm like trying to get a bus, and then the bus has to get to a ferry terminal, and I need to get a ferry to an airport, and I'm trying to find the tickets, and I'm trying to dial a number, or I'm trying to put a password in and I can't put the number in. And it's always like I'm trying to find my tickets. And I'm rushing to get many modes of transport. What on earth is that all about?
If you don't mind my saying so, you live a very, very fast life. I mean, you're always busy.
Mm.
And the dream is saying, could you possibly sit down for 5 minutes? No, I'm not sitting down. But if I sit down for 5 minutes, I have to be able to do something while I'm sitting down.
Yes.
You know? Multitasking is your middle name. So the dream is really telling you that if you just breathe and just take it easy, then you probably won't have that dream anymore.
Mm.
You have solved it. Yeah, I think you've already we've already solved the dream.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I did that today. I've been rushing around, and I'm always multitasking. I'm always working on a few projects at the same time. I've always got my phone in my hand. And I had an opportunity to just kind of sit down for 5 minutes, and I just laid there and I thought, oh, I could just sit here and enjoy the sunshine. And I was like, no, I should do something while I'm sitting here. What can I do? What can I do while I'm sitting here?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't just sit there. You have to, like, do 8 things while you're
yes.
sitting there. And otherwise, you don't feel fulfilled, and you feel guilty.
Yes.
And, okay, I am a channel. I took many of Betty's case, people, because they wanted my expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I can tell you, I can read people, and you are both, I can tell you both, you're in your last lifetimes on this planet. You do not have to come back. You're old soul.
Oh,
interesting.
And how does that make you feel?
I don't know.
That we're old souls, so we've done our time here.
This lifetime, yes, because then we go off to, it's like assignments.
Mm.
Then our next assignment, it will be much bigger, you know. Every lifetime is about something. So you're in your 23rd life now.
Wow.
Okay.
Both of you. And you have known each other in at least five lifetimes.
Oh, I love that.
I love that. That makes me smile a lot. How funny.
Yes. Yes, you're very much attached to each other in terms of friendship and love and you know, like that.
Oh, I love that.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much to Charles. What an absolute honour it was to speak to him and to have long chats about him and Betty. That was a bit of a dream come true.
It really was. He was so fun to talk to. And can I just say, I loved the bit that he said about us being old souls and that we'd known each other in previous lives.
Oh,
we both lost it a little bit, didn't we, when he said that?
That was my definite favourite. That for four lifetimes and we've come together because we want to share our news, which is basically exactly what we're doing. We're sharing our message together.
That's so true. Although I did chuckle because he kind of implied that each life you've got a sort of bigger challenge, something bigger to do, and until you get to the pinnacle, which is your last life. And given that you and I are now in our last lives, it does make me wonder, what the hell were we up to in those earlier lives if this is the pinnacle
of our 23 lifespans? We finally put a podcast together. Well done us.
Brilliant.
So dreams, Kate. So,
dreams. This, I really found this interesting and it's given me lots to think about. I've always struggled to remember my dreams. And we've been talking about this, haven't we? That literally within seconds, before I've even had enough time to open my eyelids, the dream is trickling away. It's so hard.
So frustrating.
But sometimes it's so frustrating, but sometimes you do get ones that stick, don't they?
Well, yes. Well, I think I'm slightly different to you that mostly I can remember them when I wake up. And sometimes, they slip out of my brain. And when I go to bed that night, I can just feel the feeling of the dream and it kind of all pops back into my head in a moment, which is a strange thing.
That's odd. I find that really interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. As soon as I'm horizontal again, back in bed, my dream will come back to me. It's a weird thing.
It will come
back.
Yeah.
But I have been doing what he said, because obviously, as I said, I've done this kind of thing before, but I've been doing what he said, which is bleary-eyed, reaching over and grabbing the pen and scribbling down all these notes. And it is amazing, actually, when I look back, because I don't think I would have remembered half of the stuff that had happened had I not written it down straight away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was fascinating, wasn't it? 90 seconds, did he say, is the window that you've got.
Yeah. And because you are actually still in a bit of a, you haven't fully woken up yet.
No. God, our brains are incredible. They're incredible that while we're asleep, all this activity is going on.
Yeah. And I've actually really love that we have totally deliberately put the dreams one right after the sleep one, because it's really made me think that it's so important, us being asleep.
Yeah.
You know that whole sleep when you're dead thing? That's bollocks. Sleep when you're alive.
No. Like, sleep now.
Yeah, because there's so much going on that is essential to our well-being and our memories.
Completely.
And the way that we process information. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And the fact that this processing is going on without our conscious awareness, and that even if we're not consciously aware of what's happening, it's still a really vital element of our mental activity.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
And actually, like you said, and like we said in it, it doesn't matter if you can't remember your dreams. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's like being able to write them down and then try and interpret some meaning out of it is a bonus. But actually, the important thing is that your brain is just processing all your thoughts during, that's quite a relief.
So I tried the activity that he suggested, I think it was Carl Jung, the psychologist, or was it Dali? Maybe it was Dali. Anyway, the activity he suggested about you get yourself in a comfy nap position with a key or something in your hand over a plate or a hard floor. drift off to sleep, and then when you've gone through the dream phase and that paralysis disappears, boom, you'll drop it and wake yourself up. So I've tried it. I've tried it two or three times in various different positions to get myself comfy, holding the seat in my hand. Every time it's dropped out of my hand before I've even fallen asleep. I cannot do it, but I'm going to keep on trying because this is something in that has piqued my interest. I'm determined to make it work.
Because... I remember reading this exercise about, you know, like trying to fit in a nana nap during your day and how the 20 minutes is the optimum time. But if you can't fit in the 20 minutes, what you can do is just sit there with a pen in your hand. And the moment your pen drops, because that's the moment you just like let go and your head like drops for that second. Yeah. That's when you wake back up. The pen dropping wakes you back up. But you have actually gone into a micro sleep or bit of a sleep.
And it's enough of a sleep to regenerate you a little bit.
Yes,
rejuvenate,
and it is supposed to rejuvenate. Yeah, it is supposed to give you the equivalent, well, you know, of a 20-minute nap.
Yeah.
So when you're dropping whatever you had hold in your hand, do you think that you were dropping off to sleep in that moment, just momentarily?
I don't think I even got to that point. I think I just dropped the pen by mistake.
Right, okay.
But I'm gonna persist with this one. I will report back if I manage to do it.
And so you've not managed to remember dreams either?
The dreams that I find I remember and that stick with me are ones that I have more than once. So they've definitely been repetitive dreams that I've had. Like, I dream a lot about the actor Tom Hardy. I do. I always remember that. But the funny thing about that is I don't watch Tom Hardy films. I don't kind of obsessively look him up online. I don't even find him that attractive. But for reason, Tom Hardy
is around in your head all
running around in my dreams. What about you then? What have you been dreaming about recently?
Well, my God, what haven't I been dreaming about? I've been writing it all down and there has been a lot. I tell you what, though, I have been lucid dreaming because when he seemed quite surprised. He's and was sort of saying it's really hard, whereas it is something that I do. And it is. But I think it is only something that I've been able to do once I became aware of the concept of lucid dreaming. And I was like, right, I want to be able to do this. Yes. I want to be able to, in my dream, know that I'm in a dream. So like the other night, I'm always traveling. Yeah. I'm always getting multiple trains, buses, flights, etc. In my dreams. And the other day I was dreaming that after this big long journey, I'd forgotten my jacket. Yeah. And I was like, oh God, can I go all the way back? Like, what am I going to do? And then I was like, oh no, I'm in my dream. I can just magic my jacket here. Yeah. And I was like, I want a bomber jacket. And then my jacket arrived. Yeah. And so I woke up knowing that. And also there was another bit where there was a guy who could talk to cats.
Yeah.
And my cat features a lot in my dreams now.
Okay,
yeah. That's a lot of cat-related dreams. And he was being sent to a psychiatrist because people didn't believe him, whereas I knew that he could talk to my cat because I'd seen them having a conversation. And anyway, at the same time, I'm thinking, oh, I must tell Kate about this.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
So you're in my dream.
Your brain is looking on, almost like a third person looking on at this dream.
Yeah.
That's really funny, isn't it?
Yeah. But I do think that that is a skill that you can develop.
Yes, because you hear about people who can control a whole narrative within their dreams. And it's not, they can kind of, like those games that you can play where you get to the crossroads and you decide what the next thing's going to happen in the story.
Yes.
Like, some people can really go deep on the lucid dreaming, can't they?
Yes. And what I also really like the idea of is you taking control when you're like when you're being chased or you're feeling in danger, that you actually just turn around and face whatever it is that's chasing you.
Yes.
And that is apparently they are apparently giving you a message of some form.
Yes.
I haven't actually done that, but I think that would be something to try and do.
Didn't Matthew imply, though, that you've got to be careful with that because it depends how big a trauma this person doing the chasing embodies and that it might not be healthy for you to turn around and directly confront it in such a fashion.
Yeah. And wasn't he also saying that if your brain is processing a traumatic event, that analysing your dream Oh, wait, that didn't make it into the edit, did it?
Oh, no, we must have cut that out.
Just to confuse you. Yeah, he'd also said that that sometimes it may not be in our best interest to analyse a particularly traumatic dream. Because, yeah,
you might not like it.
No, yeah. And if your brain is processing some particularly yeah. emotional event, for example, it might not actually be to your benefit to then sit there and relive it by analysing your dream. It's like, yes. just let your brain get on with it.
Yes. Yeah, okay.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, but what I do like is that because I'm always travelling in my dreams, I consulted Betty and it says... She says that travel is moving towards growth and self-understanding.
Oh, brilliant. Well, we all
love
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Tick and tick.
Yes, please. I feel like I will definitely take my dreams seriously from now on. And his explanation about why our dreams are so batshit crazy was really interesting as well. So not to just write off some nutty dream as just being... a ridiculous sort of brain fart while you're sleeping, you know, it's something's really real is going on there. It's definitely changed the way I think about my dreams.
Yes. And especially when something keeps coming up,
yeah.
I think that's really interesting because he did say that your brain could be trying to tell you something.
Yes.
So yeah, if you're in love with a lovely new bloke or, you know, an exciting new bloke and you keep dreaming about him being in a bonfire or something, or, you know, you keep dreaming about planes exploding, maybe you should look at what's going on in your life
yeah.
that's creating that kind of
yes.
anxiety.
Exactly.
I don't know, but I think, I do think that when we tune into our kind of subconscious,
yeah.
that there can be some answers in there.
Definitely. There's a lot going on beneath the surface.
Yeah. So, Kate, are you going to keep dreaming?
Keep on dreaming, girl. I'm going to keep on dreaming. Definitely. I really want to try and have some success with the whole dream incubation. I think I've not been going far enough. So before I've gone to sleep, I've been thinking of a question, really focusing on thinking on it. But actually, Matthew says to do more than that, doesn't he? He says to draw and sketch and try and creatively get this question out as much as possible before you go to sleep. So it's really ingrained in your
yeah.
neural processes before you
yeah.
sleep. So I'm going to really try and keep doing that. And
I guess you can just try harder to remember your dreams in the morning.
Yeah, yeah, completely. Just kind of maybe not wait for so long. Maybe not wait until I'm naturally opening my eyes. Maybe force
yeah.
myself up to write them down quicker.
Yeah.
And what about you, Gwen? Because I know that you've always been really interested in the symbols within dreams and the dream interpretation. But has this changed the way you think about your dreams?
So I've kind of got dream incubation and lucid dreaming. I've kind of got a loose grasp of that and I use that anyway. But I think I want to go a bit further with that. And when
yes.
you and have a bit more fun with knowing I'm dreaming, like, you know, when you're in your dream and apparently you can ask questions in your dream and you can find out
right.
stuff. Yeah. So that would be fun. I wonder if that's
really
possible.
Would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. This whole other layer to life. Like
yeah.
you've got your daytime life and now you're going to have your dream life.
Yeah. Which could arguably be a lot more interesting. Thank you for listening to Write Up My Podcast, the last episode in the current season.
I can't believe that. I feel like it has gone so quickly this season.
It has really flown.
Yeah.
And it's been a bit of a joy, hasn't it?
It really has. I've loved it. And I feel like we've spoken to some such interesting people.
Yeah. Such interesting people!
Such interesting people! Bring on, but we're going to be back, right? We're going to be back with more interesting people.
Yes. Well, now comes the break.
Yeah.
Where we usually take about, well, I think we'll take about 8 weeks, during which time we'll be preparing all of our... We've got so many topics to look at for the next season.
I know.
We're going to have to whittle it down.
We will. It's going to be some interesting shizzle coming up. But in the meantime, as always, you can email us at writeupmypodcast@gmail.com. And if you've got any things that you'd like us to feature in the next season, then now is your time. And you can also find us on Insta and Twitter at writeupmy.
Don't forget, you can subscribe and follow us wherever you listen. And if you feel able to, pop over to Apple, where you can rate and review us. And we say that because that is the only platform where you can rate and review us. And the more ratings and reviews, the better we will look. Thank you very much.
And why not go to our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/writeupmypodcast. And there you can find all sorts of extra content, and a lot of which is there for free. Enjoy. And a big thank you, and an extra, extra big thank you this week, being the last one in this season, to our amazing team of people who help us out.
Yes, a big thank you to our editor again for this episode, who is Pammy Muir. It's been great having you on board for season two. Andy T and his magic fingers has made us sound good. Andy G has created loads of awesome tunes. Absolutely love you. We would not sound the same without you. Kat O'Buil, who listens to us and tells us what to cut out. And also...
Thanks, Kat.
And also to Erica Francis George, who creates our hand-cut artwork. Thank you all. You are amazing.
And we are going to have a between seasons break now, as we said earlier. So we will be back in 8 weeks, but make sure you keep an eye on our Instagram and Twitter feeds, and we will make sure you know when we're starting back up again. And until we return, keep trying things
to make you feel good. Bye-bye.
Tell me, did you like the podcast, Brian?
No!
Oh, if unlike Brian you thought our podcast was really great, then don't hold back, like, subscribe and tell your mate. But if like Brian you thought our podcast wasn't fun, then just keep quiet, don't feel the need to tell anyone. Oh, we'd love to hear from you if you've got some thoughts to share, such rich and lovely views that all should be aware of. But I hope you liked our podcast and you thought it was really great. And if you did, like, subscribe and tell your mate. 'Cause we don't need grumpy pants bringing everybody down. No, we don't need negative Nellies making people frown. So I hope you liked our podcast and you thought it was really great. And if you did, like, subscribe and tell your mate.